This is the one with the Siege of Troy, but no Helen of Troy, and no Ajax. There's Achilles, but no Achilles' heel, not of significance anyway. And then there's a Cyclops, but now suddenly he's a one-eyed mute henchman of Odysseus. It's called The Mythmakers. Here we I go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space,
counting Daleks, Thal and Ood, and the Cybertronic race.
Sontarans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales.
Who back when?
Reviewing all of who there is.
Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, and welcome to episode C020 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. Oh my god, we've got 20 classic reviews already. I am Ponkin, yes I am, and tonight I am joined by you fine people, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land, and literally no one else. That's right, this is going to be a solo episode. Let me explain what's going on. Here's the deal. You may remember the Rohrmeister joined this podcast quite recently. Alas, he started just as the shitstorm of missing episodes in Classic Who was starting as well. This is not necessarily the best point of entry, that's what she said, for someone who has never seen Doctor Who before in his life. That being said, these missing episodes, there are about 20 that are not fully intact, shall we say, and those 20 I'm going to be doing either on my own or with the occasional, let's call it, mystery guest. You're just going to have to wait and see. And I don't mind telling you, I am a little bit nervous, because if I'm going to be doing 20 episodes literally on my own here in my flat, talking to this microphone, do you, good people of podcast land, I'm either going to grow a massive ego. Why did I say literally? Figuratively, I'm either going to grow a massive ego, or, actually I should say, and or, I'm going to go completely freaking ape nuts, because there's a lot to talk about. As I said, though, there may be the occasional mystery guest, mystery co-host joining me on this venture. And then as soon as we're done with this whole missing episode shtick, the solo episodes are going to be done. I give you my word of honor as a gentleman. And as one final tangent before we jump into this episode, I've actually only recorded one solo podcast episode before in my life. And that was for a podcast called Ponkin and Friends that I did before Who Back When. You really don't need to check out Ponkin and Friends. But on that show, I did one solo episode, and it was for Die Hard 5. It was a review of Die Hard 5. I don't know about you guys. I'm a huge fan of Die Hard, the first one, and of Die Harder, the second one, and of Die Hard with a Vengeance, the third one. And I kind of like Live Free or Die Hard, the fourth one. That's, I'm not going to complain. But the fifth one is a fucking abomination. And I think, like, conservatively speaking, like, in the strictest definition of the art form, I don't even know if it qualifies as a film. Anyway, as a consequence, I ended up recording a solo podcast for that. That is my only experience thus far of recording something on my own. So I apologize if this is a slightly mental episode. Okie dokie, this is going to rock balls. Okay, I said one last thing, there's one more thing. If this is the first time that you're listening to this podcast, I would probably suggest that you have a listen to a different episode. Unless you're really, really into the Mythmakers, have a listen to something that was recorded not just with me, but with someone else as well. So either an audiobook review with JD, or a New Who review with JD, or a Classic Who review with either the Flapjack or the Rohrmeister, chronologically speaking. Are you still there? Fantastic. Let's jump into a B-scale. The Doctor, Vicky, and the Stevemeister materialize just outside of Troy as Hector and Achilles do battle. Doc manages to inadvertently cause Hector's death and then be mistaken for the god Zeus and promptly taken to the Greek encampment. The Siege of Troy has been going on for 10 years, and now they want him to spirit them to victory. Meanwhile, Steve goes and gets himself captured by the Greeks, only to be released, and then voluntarily get himself captured again, this time by the Trojans. And Vicky stays put in the TARDIS, but the TARDIS does not stay put. It is instead taken away to Troy, where she disembarks and set about flirting with Troilus, brother of Paris, of Helen of Troy fame. Helen of Troy, by the way, does not appear in this serial. Long story short, now all three travellers must get themselves uncaptured before the siege is over, and or at the very least try to survive the ordeal in some way or another. End of B-Scow. I hope that helps you a great deal in life. You are welcome, people. Okie dokie, let's jump into this bad boy. This is a four-parter. Episode 1, The Temple of Secrets. It starts off, this is, by the way, a completely lost episode. So what I saw was the Loose Cannon Productions reconstruction of this. And props to Loose Cannon, once again, they've done a fantastic job. And it does seem, I have to say though, it does seem as though the source material this time around was not in quite as good a shape as it was for, let's say, for instance, Mission to the Unknown. Or, well, almost any of the previous recons. It is occasionally really bad, but that's okay. And for that reason, a lot of the scenes, if you've seen this, this is not going to be news to you, but for that reason, a lot of the descriptions, a lot of the action, so to speak, is not only presented in caption form the way that they normally do with Loose Cannon, but we get these just text frames. Like, it just, the screen just goes black, you get white text on it. It's like a silent movie. You just get this text. And in fact, we start off episode one on one such text box. It goes, "On the great plains of Asia Minor, Hector and Achilles do battle." Just want to point out, I'm going to speed through this episode, by the way, but I just want to point out, that is the freaking most vague statement you could possibly start on. Like, it doesn't say just outside of Troy, which everyone who watches this has heard of. We just go with, "On the great plains of Asia Minor." Which, where? Whereabouts are these great plains? Where are you? Give me some coordinates. Give me a GPS location. Anyway, whatever. So, fine. They don't get more specific than that. The TARDIS materializes just as Hector and Achilles are battling, as I said, and we get a little bit of the action sequence between the two. This is not necessarily the best fight of this serial. Have to tell you though, holy freaking balls of Beelzebub, there are some kick-ass action scenes in this, and oh my goodness do I wish that we could have seen this, because it really seems like they went all out. However, this first one, whilst not necessarily alluding to being well choreographed, holy crap, it does have some fantastic one-liners, such as, let me just pull something out of my hat here, such as, "Let me throw the dog a bone or two." What? What are you talking about, Hector? What does that even mean? Or, here's my favorite, "A bone of meat down your throat?" What? Are these guys doing battle or are they about to shag? I have no idea. Anyway, in the TARDIS, DVS, that is Doc, Vicky and the Stevemeister, are watching them on the scanner. And the Doctor goes, "You'll notice they're wearing Grecian costumes." Costumes? Do you mean clothes or garments? No matter. Anyway, so they figure out they must be somewhere in Greece, but they don't know what time, they don't know anything really, and the Doc decides, maybe not wisely, to go outside and ask them where they are. What? These two guys are doing battle. They are fighting, clearly to the death. Like, they are not play fighting. They are fucking sword fighting. It is vicious. One of them, spoiler alert, is about to die. And the Doctor just goes, no, just, you guys wait here. Don't worry about it. It's totally fine. I'm just going to pop out. I'm going to ask these two fine gentlemen who clearly are very well-mannered and bloodthirsty if maybe they can tell me what time of day and year and, you know, where we are. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. This beginning really gets me upset here. Ladies and gentlemen, I really apologize. One interesting point to note here, start of episode one, is that Vicky's ankle is still injured from the end of that episode that doesn't take place in Galaxy 4. I forget what it's called again. However, spoiler alert, in a little bit, when she really gets into the plot, like when she actually is of significance to this story, her ankle is fine. Like, this is the only mention of her ankle being injured. However, I do think it is interesting to note because it does directly tie this back to Galaxy 4. Oh, that's what that episode was called. Completely slipped my mind. Anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. Okie dokie, so the Doctor exits, he distracts the combatants with his mere presence, and Achilles takes the opportunity and turns Hector into Swiss cheese. I mean, he straight up kebabs the guy. FYI, this is the first death caused by the Doctor in the serial. Now, Achilles, who looks nothing like Brad Pitt, by the way, takes Doc to be the mythical god Zeus. This doesn't necessarily mean that they've materialized in some mythological version of reality. He's just a religious dude. People believed in gods and whatnot, fine. He assumes that the Doctor is Zeus. Anywho, the Doctor at first protests, goes, no, I'm not Zeus, I'm just a dude. And definitely not Brad Pitt, says something to the effect of, hey, remember when you took the form of a swan and straight up raped Leta? Why couldn't you take the form of an old kooky beggar now? Calling the Doctor a beggar to his face. Doctor, obviously not being very amused by this, but this is going to change because definitely not Brad Pitt, immediately says something like, yes, but your divinity shines through your beggarish exterior or something to that effect, giving the Doctor's ego a massive HJ, and the Doctor is just fantastically pleased with this. Anyway, even though he is completely sure that the Doc is the most powerful god of all, he still insists on bringing him back to their encampment. The Siege of Troy, I mentioned this in the Beast Scout, has gone on for 10 years already, and he is eager to have the aid of Zeus to finally put it to an end. And the Doc totally embraces his new role, but nonetheless, this fucking ridiculous Achilles is pretty goddamn ballsy. I mean, would you just tell Zeus, if you met Zeus right now, if he came into your living room or your car, or I don't know where you're listening to this podcast, but if he approached you right now, would you just go, oh shit, you are the most powerful god in the entire, you know, Greek mythological sphere, world, whatnot, in Greek mythology is what I'm trying to say. Would you then go, here's what I want you to do, I want you to come to the Starbucks with me right now. In fact, I'm not going to take no for an answer. That's pretty ballsy. Well done, Achilles. Good for you. Anyway, back in the TARDIS, we're now treated to a bit of actual video footage, even though it looks a little bit like someone filmed it on Super 8 as it played on TV, and then projected that onto a wobbly sheet, made a handful of charcoal sketches of whatever he or she saw, and then turned that into a flipbook that we're now seeing through a dirty window that is being rained upon. No matter. In the TARDIS, the Steve Meister and Vapor Up are chatting, and Vicky reckons that the chap leading the Doc away, i.e. Achilles, looks really friendly now. So, let's just take a little meta step and put this into context. For those of you who have just tuned in, first of all, thanks for tuning in. To put this into context for you guys, Vicky is referring to the guy she just witnessed full-on kebab another dude to his death with a massive sword. She is now referring to him as looking really friendly and harmless. Oh, wow. Fade to just outside of Troy, we think, but in just a moment we'll learn that we haven't actually moved at all. Anyway, just outside Troy, where not quite Zeus and definitely not Brad Pitt are joined by Odysseus and his silent sailor buddies. Why do I say silent sailor buddies? They have no lines, we don't hear them, there's no photographic evidence of them ever having existed, but the caption reads thus, sailor buddies. Well, it says Odysseus and his sailors, whatnot. I'm paraphrasing, you get the drift. So Odysseus sees Hector dead on the ground. Actually, he doesn't. He talks with Definitely Not Brad Pitt about Definitely Not Brad Pitt's recent battle. Then, Definitely Not Brad Pitt indicates Hector's body right there in plain view on the ground where they stand. And Odysseus goes, whoa, that's Hector. Which I believe we referred to previously on the show as the Terry Nation trope. It's right there in front of him. He doesn't see it until someone points it out or until it's important to the plot. Doesn't matter. This, by the way, means what exactly? Have they, A, been dragging Hector's corpse around? And if so, wouldn't Odysseus then definitely have noticed? Or B, and this is the impression I got at the time anyway, when Odysseus, after expressing disbelief regarding the Doctor being Zeus, sees the TARDIS, clearly, well, this is what I'm assuming anyway, clearly, they haven't actually moved at all. Anyway, I'm very confused. The thing is, considering that all of this video footage is missing, considering we're just looking at these still images and someone has, in essence, you know, loose canon, I'm presuming, has basically just interpreted the footage and based it on, I don't know, witness accounts. I have no idea. UFO catalogs. I'm talking out of my ear hole here. But essentially, it's an interpretation of what it used to be. So it's very difficult to actually make out what's going on. Anyway, let's move on. Inside the TARDIS again, we are treated to VS, Vicky Steve Meister, legitimately shitting themselves. Vicky in particular is now panicking. She's going through some sort of crazy mood swings here, whatever. Doc says the TARDIS is his temple, so Odysseus now really doesn't believe him, but insists Doc come with them to the camp to spread more good fortune, if indeed he is Zeus. And also, while he's at it, to tell them a couple of anecdotes about Aphrodite's delicious boobies. Doc says, I refuse to enter into that any kind of vulgar baldry. Not being English, by the way, I'm assuming that that's just some archaic way of saying ribaldry. Either that or it's a line fuck up, or maybe I'm just being stupid. Doesn't matter. Anyway, the Doc is now forced to come along. Why? But I've already said this before, but why? By the powers of Mount Olympus, doesn't he just say he needs something from the TARDIS to perform a miracle or whatever? And spoiler alert, in a bit, he's actually going to have that exact idea. But he'll say, take me back to my temple and I'll perform a miracle on your ass, but let's do that, like, tomorrow morning. But you could say that right now. He could end this charade right now. Meanwhile, let's cut back to the TARDIS. Vaporub has now decided that there was no need to panic. So she's insane. I mean, she is emotionally unstable. She goes, no need to panic, guys. Totally fine. The doc is most likely completely all right. Strike that. He's most definitely all right. Even though he was fucking obviously just kidnapped by crazy Greek amigos right after some other dude was run through with a sword. She even says, let me consult my notes. But the big man who just straight up kidnapped him laughed, so it must be fine, Nespa. She says this. Sort of. Steve Meister isn't convinced, though, so they split up. And Vicky's now alone, which I'm sure can't be of any harm, right? And Stevie Boy follows Doc and Odysseus, while definitely not Brad Pitt, speeds ahead to let Agamemnon know in advance what a demented shitbag Odysseus is. Cut to the encampment, where Agamemnon and Menelaus, king of the Spartans, don't you know, are chit-chatting about how Menelaus essentially doesn't want Helen of Troy back. Have I mentioned this already? Helen of Troy does not take part in the serial at all. Okay, I just want to say, the acting here, or voice acting anyway, it's freaking top-notch. It is amazing. However, are we to believe that it took these brothers 10 years, a full dog-dern decade, to have this conversation? Surely, like a week into the siege, Menelaus would have gone, dudes, I'm really sorry my crazy cheating wife ran off with that dude after whom they named that place in France with the delicious wine and the frilly dresses and the galois and the funky tower. And I'm really sorry I dragged you all out here, but the weather's shit and frankly I'm happy to call it quits. So let's just head back home, right? What do you say, chaps? This ticks me off when this sort of thing happens on TV. And Doctor Who does this a lot. Like, the second we tune into the show happens to be the moment that a very sort of expositional conversation takes place, or happens to be the exact moment of historical importance. Now, the latter obviously is vital to the survival of the show and the core sort of concept of the show. It wouldn't be interesting if they turned up, let's say, I don't know, 2 weeks after the sacking of Troy, but it would have been interesting if they had turned up fucking 8 years into it rather than exactly at the end. And what the hell, man? Like, 10 years after they've been there for the sake of getting Helen back, at least officially, this is when they choose to have this conversation? Blows my mind. Anyway, okay. By the same token, though, this scene also tells us of Agamemnon's ulterior motive to take over all of Asia Minor, and Menelaus, the fat, drunken slob, starts explaining to Agamemnon the value of trade routes to be owned by conquering Troy. As though, again, I mean, what? What the hell, man? It's like there was zero strategizing before this campaign. It's like these dudes just went, hey, let me check my iCal. Yep, as I thought, looks like starting this afternoon. I have nothing planned for forever. So let's just do that Siege of Troy thing indefinitely. God. All right. Anyway, should be said, this is all quite educational. I mean, in a way, it's educational. The whole, like, oh, I don't really care about Helen anymore, that's not educational. That's in there almost like as a joke for the parents watching this with their kids. But the whole trade routes, the Agamemnon having an ulterior motive, that's essentially part of a lesson. That's pretty amazing for the kids watching this. They're learning stuff. I'm not kidding anyone. I was learning stuff watching this serial. It was fantastic, really. I was definitely learning stuff. My mind was growing, expanding. Fantastic. See, now I'm already going crazy talking by myself here. Anyway, we also learned that honor is a pretty high priority for these chaps, and as Menelaus failed to challenge Paris properly, he ought to challenge someone else, like, let's say, Hector. And in my notes, by the way, at this point I've written, Betty ends up challenging Doc or... I should have said Doc or Ian in my notes. Oh, I miss you, Ian. Doc or Steve, in that case. And by the way, spoiler alert, I was wrong when I wrote this. I had no idea. No, that's not happening. Blammo! Anyway, in steps, definitely not Brad Pitt, explains that Hector's already dead, as a freaking doornail, and tells them all about the whole Odysseus kidnapping Zeus business. Agamemnon is quite displeased to hear about a little old man who may in fact be Zeus being kidnapped by one of his gringos, and says, hey, you can't be too careful in these situations. Let's just, operate under the assumption that he is Zeus. Better safe than sorry. So he calls for Odysseus to be brought before him. Blam! In step, arch bastard Odysseus. And, Dr. Zeus. I can't believe I hadn't thought about that until just now. It's alright, I cracked myself up. Moving on, I'm just going to speed through this now. Dr. Zeus tries to prove his divinity by dropping some knowledge on Agamemnon and friends, but they're not impressed by his line fumbles. Just in case he is either truly Zeus, though, or a spy for the enemy, they place him under arrest. Again, pretty goddamn ballsy. I mean, let's say he is Zeus. Okay, of all you people in podcast land listening to this right now, all of you who are either in a Starbucks or a Costa or a Cafe Nero or one of those chain cafes, raise your hand. Holy shit, that's a lot of you. Okay, if Zeus, or if a dude climbed into that cafe right now and did something, didn't perform a miracle, but did something that clearly seemed as though, like, you know what, if this guy claims to be Zeus, I'm going to at least consider it for a moment. I'm not going to disparage him immediately. Would you actually put him in, like, would you cuff him? Very ballsy. These Greeks, they're no wonder this has been taking them 10 years. They've been offending gods left, right and center. Ugh. Okie dokie. So we cut to the forest where Steve Aruni is on fast approach. Unbeknownst to him, though, he's being observed by this one-eyed guy who looks freaking exactly like, what's his face, Kuiju, the dodgiest man in the Mongol Empire from Marco Polo, except sans monkey. He's got an eye patch, whatever. So practically Kuiju is not the only person who's spotted the Steve Meister, though, because now we cut to Odysseus, who is joined by, wait for it, a, or possibly the, Cyclops. Okay, so want to make something clear. If, let's say, you've only seen the first episode of The Mythmakers, the recon thereof, then you may have made the same mental note or actual pen on paper note that I'm looking at right now, because I've written in my notes, so this is now definitely a mythical reality that they've appeared in. Because, I mean, at this point, I was just thinking, like, are we to believe that there are just Cyclopses around, like, without us noticing, like Yetis? Or maybe this actually refers back to the One-Eyed Man, which, by the way, spoiler alert, it does. Which means calling him a Cyclops, I mean, unless he is actually a Cyclops, and Cyclopses... Is that the plural? I don't know. If Cyclopses are just, like, they are these giant monsters that, however, appear to us as spindly men with eye patches, then that's really weird. Because, I mean, either this is a mythological creature, or calling him a Cyclops is simply the meanest, most insensitive nickname ever, because this poor guy, like, it's not his fault that he's missing an eyeball. I mean, I'm assuming there was some sort of altercation or injury, right? Oh, anyway, I'm gonna have a sip of squash. Ah, that's refreshing. All right. Anyway, Cyclops tells Odysseus in sign language, because he's a mute, by the way. He tells him in sign language that Steve is approaching, and then Odysseus, mega bellend Odysseus, then orders him to return to the TARDIS and keep a lookout. And it's a freaking shame we don't get to see him, Cyclops, I mean, because that's simply lost. I mean, I think we have one frame, possibly two frames, I don't know. I'm thinking there's just one still image of the guy with the eye patch. I'm sorry, he looks like Kuju. Like, it's not that impressive. I'd like to see more of him. Anyway, whatever. Even Stephen appears, is apprehended by Odysseus, and taken to the tent where Agamemnon, Menelaus, and Dr. Zeus are still chilling. And now Doc is saying Steve is, in point of fact, none other than Apollo, I believe he says at first. Alright, okay. Weirdly, Steve is doing nothing to corroborate the Doctor's fiction. And unless I've misunderstood something... Sorry, I'm going to say this. If I've misunderstood something here, please let me know. But as I understand it, Doc provides a divine alibi for Steve. Like, he says something to the effect of, he's another child of Olympus come to see his father, right? As in Zeus. But even though he does this, Steve does not confirm it. Doc then changes his story, says he doesn't recognize him and that they might as well kill him. And then he changes his mind again and says he is to be sacrificed at the TARDIS, as in his temple, quote-unquote, in the morning, where he will perform a miracle for them. So, how many times can he change his mind without people starting to doubt his story of divinity? And also, what the fuck, Steve Meister? You've got this perfect story. You've got these crazy Greeks who, like, totally believe that Zeus is... That the Doctor is Dr. Zeus. That he is... Fuck, that he's Zeus, is what I'm trying to say. You can just go and say, yes, I am Apollo! You just watch me run. I will now take my father to the temple and we will miracle your asses. They don't do that. He does nothing to corroborate. He's like, I've never seen this man in my life. Why would he say... What? He says that! I just remember this now. He says... I have never seen this man in my life, indicating the Doctor. Why would he say this? This is so dumb. Anyway, Kablamatron, Cyclops appears and communicates to Arch-Bellend Odysseus that the temple, aka the TARDIS, has now vanished into thin air. At which point, one might presume Dr. Zeus and Stephen, who wouldn't know an alibi if it dropped out of his butthole, might be thinking rather condescending thoughts of Vaporub since she was in the TARDIS on her own. Anyway, end of episode 1. Episode 2, Small Profit, Quick Return. Love that title. Fantastic. Puns. Love puns. Okay, At this point in my notes, I've written, fast return? Because I was thinking, maybe, you know, a quick return, maybe you could do something with a fast return switch. Anyway, it doesn't matter, blammo. Next morning, the whole gang goes to the side of the TARDIS, where, indeed, it is no more. Tracks lead away, though, so we've got more of a web planet situation than an edge of discretion one, and we learn that the tracks apparently lead to Troy, so wonder if this is going to be a precursor to the famed wooden horse. Who knows? Whatever, blah, blah, blah. Bellend now requests that Dr. Zeus electrocute Steve Meister with a lightning bolt. It's such a weird episode. Anyway, whereupon Doc fesses up. He just goes, listen, chill. Fine, you got me. Busted. We're not gods, but we're also not Trojan spies. And Agamemnon now commands them to be executed, then scurries off, no doubt to drink more wine. And Steve and Doc proceed to tell Bellend all about who they are, as in, or everything, the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Meanwhile, we fade to Troy, where Paris, who looks nothing like Orlando Bloom, by the way, presents the TARDIS to his dad, King Priam. Or Priam? Priam. I'm going to say Priam. I don't know. Anyway, he's saying it's some kind of shrine he stole from the Greeks. And here we also meet Cassandra, his sister and the high priestess of Troy, who joins her dad in mocking Paris. Paris, at this point, he seems like a bit of a goofball. Like, he's handsome, sure, but he appears to not really have a clue. Also, sorry if I'm desperately wrong here, but isn't he supposed to be tapping Helen's fine Greek ass? Anyway, I'm saying anyway a lot in this recording. I apologize, I'll get better at this. It transpires, Cassandra had a dream about the actual Trojan horse, like the whole tale of the Trojan horse, and has now incorrectly diagnosed the TARDIS as such. Hence, they're now going to burn it as an offering to the gods. And inside the TARDIS, meanwhile, Vicky is watching the whole thing on the scanner and expresses a significant amount of fear, you know, by grabbing onto her pigtails. Screenshot on the website, people. Cut to Stevie Boy and Doc Meister wrapping up the whole time travel bio for Bellend. And Bellend, that's Odysseus, by the way, he believes them. He says he'll release them on the condition that they now devise a plan within 48 hours to defeat Troy. Back in Troy, meanwhile, the TARDIS is being prepped for a divine barbecue. Cassandra calls out for a sign from the gods that they're doing the right thing, whereupon Vix Vaporub steps out and tells them she's a girl next door from the future. Alright then, fine. Cassandra thinks she should be burned as a witch, Paris just wants to relax for a moment, and the king refers to her, I hope you're listening, Flapjack, as a child, and then starts interrogating her. Oh yeah, and she's also given a new name, Cressida. Alright, because Vicky is a, quote, outlandish name, and King Priam apparently is a massive racist cockhead. Let's pop in a tiny little tangent here. I'm not super duper au fait with the history of Troy. If Flapjack were here, he would be able to regale us with every minute detail, because he studied history and he's massively knowledgeable about this sort of stuff. But I had to give this a bit of a Google, and I was reminded of something that I remember studying in uni, but which I then also promptly forgot, possibly because I had quite a few cocktails. There's a Shakespeare play, Troilus and Cressida, in which, actually I think we're going to probably put a pin in this and then return to it a little bit later on, but there is the actual love story of Troilus, of Troy, and Cressida, of Troy, another Trojan chick. Through sheer happenstance, Vicky is given the name Cressida. Now, I'm thinking, in 1965, when this aired on TV, how many people were thoroughly knowledgeable about this sort of stuff? Like, how many people would recognize, if not the historical aspect or the mythical aspect? How many people, I don't know how many people in Great Britain in 1965 had read the Iliad, yeah? Presumably not that many, but how many people would have been acquainted with Shakespeare? So presumably quite a few more. So if they had known about this, the second they drop her name, Cressida, they're going to go, all right, well, she's going to, you know, start banging Troilus. Anyway, let's put a pin in that because there's another name that's going to be dropped about that very same story a little bit later on, but we're not there yet. Anyway, back to Priam and company. Priam now also dispatches Paris to the war, and as he leaves, there are some very flirtatious glances and words twixt him and Vaporub. I think that's Paris. I don't think that's Troilus. I'm fucking completely, absolutely sure that is Paris. It would make more sense if it's Troilus. If I'm wrong, let me know. I honestly do not have the energy to rewind and have a look again. In my notes now, at this point, by the way, I've written, where the hell is Helen? I will never receive an answer for that. Anyway, Steve and Doc are now chatting about the sacking of Troy. Steve Rooney suggests the wooden horse, but the Doc dismisses it as a fable. It's like, no, this is just a story that Homer made up. No, we're not doing that. It's never going to work. And then Belen pops around, and we learn that Paris is challenging Achilles. Achilles. But Agamemnon wants Belend to go fight instead. Steve, however, suggests he go and let himself get captured by Paris so that he may go rescue Vicky No Pants, which Belend thinks is brave and perfectly fine. A very strange reaction from Belend, I think. Anyway, so now Steve and Paris meet on the battlefield, and this whole thing is hilarious. In fact, I'm going to propose a soundbite. Soundbite? Soundbite. It's not as much fun when I'm on my own.
Adulterer. Yes. Well, I'm prepared to overlook that for the moment. I assure you I have no quarrel with you.
I'm Greek. You're Trojan. Isn't not that quarrel enough?
Yes, well, personally, I think this whole business has been carried just a little bit too far. I mean, that Helen thing was just a misunderstanding.
Blammo. They fight. Stevie yields, gives Paris's ego a nice sloppy BJ, and Paris then takes him to Troy to be his prisoner and to tell King Priam some of the alleged tales of heroism that Steve-O claims that the Greek troops tell of him back at Belend HQ. Cut to Troy, where Vicky and Priam have just finished their dins, and Vaporub, out of nowhere, mentions that Priam's youngest son, Troilus, whom, you know what, I'm gonna retcon myself. I reckon he dispatched Troilus and not Paris to the war before. Yeah, okay, so that would explain the whole flirting, the flirtatious glances. Okay, so she just mentions, you know what, your youngest son, Troilus, don't know if anyone's told you this before, but he's like a total hunk of steaming man buns. And Priam says, you know what, apparently he seems rather taken with you too. He then also mentions that Paris's libido is getting him into trouble all the time. And then Vicky Nopans is about to reveal the whole story of the Trojan horse, and thus give history a further shafting. But luckily, Paris storms in with his prisoner. And Steve sees Vicky, goes Vicky. Vicky sees the Steve-meister, goes Steve-meister. And then Cassandra pops up like the freaking mole that she is and says that because she and Greek Steve know each other, she's clearly a spy and is to be killed. End of episode 2. Cliffhanger. Episode 3. Death of a spy. Holy shit, this is exciting, right guys? Very exciting. Spoiler alert. If you watch these two eps back to back, the tension of the cliffhanger is very short-lived. It's a little bit like the gang finding blood on Bab's bracelet at the end of Keys of Marinus, episode 1, I think, and then finding, spoilers, that she's totally fine at the start of episode 2, because we ended episode 2 with them about to be killed, and guards storming in, yeah, and now, 5 seconds into episode 3, Paris just goes, hey, stand down, chaps, I give the orders around here, not my sister, and Priam tends to agree. In fact, you know what, let's have a soundbite. Soundbite.
It seems there's a man lurking behind that flaccid facade, after all.
Flaccid facade. Nice one. Well done, Priam. Anyway, Priam now gives Vicky a choice. If she is really who she claims to be, she must either give them information from the future that will help them win the war, or she is to use her supernatural abilities as someone from the future to turn the tide and, help them win the war. Wait, what? Those are, literally, not figuratively, the same freaking thing. And let's not stop there. He says she has one whole day to make up her mind, or until tomorrow evening, quote, to be precise. How the shit is that any more precise than saying a day from now? Why can't they all just synchronize sundials and say, you know, tomorrow after we've had our dins or something? Anyway. They're popped in the dungeon. That's Vicky and Steve. They're popped in the dungeon. And we cut back to the Dockmeister, who's, at this point, bent the Prime Directive over a table and is giving it a thorough fisting. Because now he's explaining to Odysseus, a.k.a. Belend, how to build a freaking catapult. And, wait for it, an airplane. Great. Well done, Doc. Well freaking done. He's essentially doing what the meddling monk was doing, but oh well, I suppose it's morally justifiable. And Belend goes, that's a spiffing initiative, Doc Hammer. Let's do that. And you know what? You'll have the honor of being its first pilot. To which the Doc responds by straight up soiling himself. Back in Troy, the dungeon, meanwhile, has turned into Exposition City, as Vicky and Steve clarify to the viewers of 1965 that Vicky has one day to think of a way for the Trojans to win the war, and outside, the Doc now has a day to think of a way for the Greeks to win the war. Then, blammo, Cyclops turns up, and yes, it is the one-eyed dude, and everyone is just being a total knob, because this poor mute gringo can't help having just one eye. What the shit? Calling him Cyclops is so goddamn mean. Anyway, I gotta stop saying anyway. They then tell him not to attack Troy until 2 days later. One-Eyed Jack, though, grunts a response, and then Troilus turns up. Yeah, One-Eyed Jack leaves, heads off. Troilus gives Vicky some food and then slips his dick through the bars. Okay, no, he doesn't do that, but he wants to. Cut to the Greek encampment, where the Doc has changed his mind and gives Belend the idea for the Trojan horse, which, upon reflection, really should have been called the Greek horse, right? Or the Gallifreyan pony or whatnot. The point is, the Doc explains the whole plan, step by step, to Belend. Let's just remember that that happens. Meanwhile, Vicky and Troilus are now actually making out through the bars. Something punchline about wearing a Trojan on his willy. I'll think of something later. Okay, so they're not actually making out, but they might as well be, because they've racked their flirtations up to 11. We learned that Willy is 17, which is totally freaking preposterous, because he must be at least 30 if he's a day. Blam! Back at the camp. Bellend now goes, let's see that in an instant replay! And relays the whole plan that the Doc just relayed to him step by step to Agamemnon this time. Step by repeated step, with one minor alteration. He says, the Doc will now be in the horse as well. Okay then. Also, let's just add one more thing. Doc has drawn up a rudimentary plan for the horse on some parchment. He's labeled it Plan B, the Trojan horse. Plan B? Alright, I'm sorry, that really cracks me up. I'll put a screenshot of that on the website as well. That's ridiculous. What do you mean, Plan B? Okay, so now Willy reveals to Vaporub by means of Marinus-esque slips that he fancies the pants off her. And she assures him, by that I mean, he goes, well, okay, I can't really remember what he says, but I'm going to paraphrase it. It's something to the effect of, I really like you. I mean, my neighbor said he really likes you. I mean, it's something like that. It's ridiculous. Anyway, she assures him that she and Stevie, whom for literally no reason whatsoever, she's still referring to by his assumed Greek name, are strictly platonic, and that Stevie is not allowed anywhere near her vagina, which tickles Willy a little bit. Okay, let's return to the pin from before. Steve's assumed Greek name, as in the name that he has picked for himself, so to speak, or rather, I'll fess up. There are a few details that I left out before. So when he went out to battle Paris, he went to like the tent next door and picked up the uniform, like the armor and whatnot, helmet and stuff, of another Greek soldier by the name of Diomedes. Now, he is actually impersonating the Greek Diomedes. He's not going like, I am Stevenus, you know, whatever. He's claiming to be Diomedes. Let's go back to the pin. So, in Troilus and Cressida, there is the actual thing of Troilus assuming or seeing, I think. No, sorry. Troilus actually sees, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sorry if there are some Shakespearean scholars in the audience right now. But correct me if I'm wrong. If I'm wrong. You know what? Fuck it. Don't correct me if I'm wrong. This may or may not be the case. The issue in the play is, or in the myth, is that Troilus sees his beloved Cressida giving a handjob to Mr. Diomedes, and for that reason goes on like a vengeance rampage. This is literally all I can gather from the combination of Wikipedia 5 minutes before pressing record and the very vague memory I have of this one single lecture years and years ago back at uni. Anyway, seems pretty freaking weird that these three should now be in the same room. Anyway, so whatever. Willy now leaves as best he can with his pounding erection, promising to come back soon and see what he can do to get both Vicky, aka Cressida, and the Stevemeister, aka Diomedes, fed and or released. So now Steve and Vicky are placing their hopes once more, they verbalize this, once more on Cyclops, saying, you know what, hope Cyclops made it out alive. Blam! Cut to Cyclops being killed with an arrow to the chest outside. Holy balls. Okay. And then we cut again. This is all a series of mega short scenes, by the way. This time we see the Greeks having finished the Trojan horse, and it's actually like semi-intact video footage. Pretty cool. We get to see this freaking amazing horse prop. I have no idea how big a horse they constructed. This may very well be a miniature. I have no idea, but it's really, really nicely done. Anyway, blah, 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 blah. Inside the horse now, the Doc is having second thoughts. But the condoms, by which I mean the Trojans, are turning up and they've passed the point of no return, essentially. So, cut to the cells, where Willy shows up and tells Vaporub the Greeks have gone and that she is free to go. The Stevemeister, meanwhile, is still incarcerated, but that's fine. Vicky doesn't give a half a shit, though, and she leaves with Willy. So, two shakes of a Trojan winky later, and Paris pops up announcing that he's found the great horse of Asia, and he's bringing it into the city. This is, freaking obviously, the wooden horse, right? So, Cassandra recognizes it as an omen of doom, okay? Because, remember, she had that weird dream about the Trojan horse, like she had an actual vision. This is happening now, and no one seems to care. Like, she is the... Oh, wow. Oh, you know what? Don't complain to me. Don't complain to the screenwriters. Complain to Homer. This is just plain ridiculous. Anyway, she assumes, no, this is a bad omen, this is going to mean the end of Troy. Paris just thinks she's a weirdo, Willie just wants to bang Vapor Robin, Priam is too pleased that apparently he's just won the war to even care. End of episode 3, episode 4, the Horse of Destruction! We start off with the horse being brought into the city. This looks glorious, by the way. Okay, it's a pretty big horse prop. Anyway, gotta stop saying anyway. It's like this weird verbal tic I've developed. Right, very self-conscious about this now. So, Vicky heads into the dungeon to free Steve-O, and Uber B-word Cassandra dispatches one of her acolytes to spy on her. So, Vicky, Steve, they pop out to check out the horse. We get a little spiel about it probably being part of the doc's plan to rescue them, because obviously they know that it's just this veritable piñata of Greek soldiers. But they're not done messing with history. Oh, no, not yet. So, Steve also suggests Vicky go tell Willie to get the shit out of Troy. I don't know. I'm not an expert, but I'm assuming that if she didn't warn him, he would end up dying during the attack, right? I would assume. But they want to change this. Fine, great. By the way, they do this because Steve has realized that she fancies the hell out of him and whatever. Blah, 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 blah. The acolyte that I mentioned before, her name's Katarina, by the way, she appears in view. So Steve and Vicky, they launch the let's split up and meet back here in 10 minutes trope. And Vicky heads off to find Troilus. We then get another cutscene of Vapor Up with Priam and his absolutely effed up kids. By the way, still no sign of Helen. Anyway, they ask her if she freed Steve Aruni. She says nope. Cassandra says she's a witch. She says, nope. Then Cassandra says, the city's doomed. And lastly, Priam says, shut up. So the royal fam leaves, but they leave Katarina with Vicky as a god. Let's put a pin in that as well. Or like a UN observer. She is there. She's not a UN observer. She is a god. She is a freaking in-your-face spy, okay? She is not on Vicky's side. Back in the horsey, Doc and Belen are having a row. Belen reveals once again what a total shit he is by saying he hopes Agamemnon, and definitely not Brad Pitt, will die in the attack, so he gets a greater share of the booty. Doc wants to leave the horse ASAP, but Belen won't let him. Meanwhile, no one seems concerned with the Trojans probably being able to hear them argue in there. We just keep it down, guys. This is war. Alright. Yada yada yada. Vicky tells Troilus to get out of the city. Blah blah blah. We get a clip of the Greek ships returning, according to the caption. Quote, under cover of darkness, but it looks pretty dang bright and shiny to me. Blam blam blam. Belen lowers a rope from the horse's tum-tum, and the Greeks and Doc start spilling out of it. If you're thinking at this point, why in the name of Hades are there no Trojans guarding and or admiring this magnificent wooden statue at night, indeed, at all hours of the day, then your guess is as good as mine. Go ask Homer. Outside, anyway, in indisputable daylight, Troilus bumps into Achilles, and we get to hear a fantastic fight scene. I kid you not, this seems legitimately badass. This seems like such a fantastically well-choreographed, super grown-up action scene. Like, it seems amazing. And holy crap, wouldn't you know it, Willy arises victorious, putting Achilles out of his misery like he's the rhino merman dachshund bukkake monster from The Rescue. And if you haven't seen it, do. And then listen to the review of it that Flappy and I recorded a while back. Hey! Plug. Okay, shit, nearly forgot. Thank God for my notes. There's no freaking mention of his heel. The Achilles heel. What an epic missed opportunity. As far as I can tell, from this action scene, Willy literally just cuts him down. That's it. He just... I think it's referred to as a savage blow. Good for you, Achilles. Anyway, alright, whatever. Let's get this over with. We cut to Troy, where, still daylight, the gates have now been opened and Greeks are pouring in. Belend kills the entire royal fam, minus Willy, of course. And minus Cassandra, who survives for, well, you're gonna see it in a little bit. Whilst she's just yelling a very loud, hey, I told you so! And then the doc is reunited with Vicky No Pants. This is all like one massive scene. Whatever. This is freaking mega, ladies and gentlemen. Vicky is in a state of utter panic, and Doc tries to calm her down, to no avail, so Vicky tells Katerina, remember, Cassandra's acolyte, actually I'm not sure if I ever mention her name, anyway, that chick, her name is Katerina, you know who I mean, whatever. Vicky tells her, this is the doctor, now go find Steve Meister, and I'm pretty sure the Trojan Chiquita just asks Doc if he's from the other time too. Pretty sure. Anyway, so does this mean No Pants has somehow not only turned her? Because she was freaking crazy, right? She was a bad guy, so to speak. But she's also told her, as in Vicky has also told her, their entire backstory as well? A moment ago, this chick was a spy, loyal to Cassandra, who wanted to burn Vaporub as a witch. Makes no sense. Okay, whatever. So, right, we cut to Stevesy, who's injured, but he's just slain, like, this Trojan warrior, like the butch gringo that he is. And Katerina sees this. Like, she turns up just as Stevesy, Steve Meister, Steve-O, Stevie Boy, Steve-A-Rooney, Steven, even Steven. I'm running out of names for this guy. She pops around just in time to see him cut down one of her countrymen. But still, what does she do? Oh, she helps him back to the TARDIS. Again, makes no sense. And then we get a cutscene of Bellend and Cassandra, and he's essentially telling his men not to kill her because she's reserved for Agamemnon. Like, he's going to give her to Agamemnon as a gift, and he can't wait until Agamemnon, quote, has a talk with her, i.e. rapes her to death. This is insane. Children watched this in the 60s. So then, God damn it. All right, Doc, Vicky, and Katerina now help Steve into the TARDIS, and just then, Bellend arrives. He claims the TARDIS as the spoils of war, he says. But the Doc tells him where he can shove his spoils. He leaps into the TARDIS, and the TARDIS dematerializes. Wait, what? Spoiler alert for 30 seconds from now. No, actually, you know what? I'm not going to spoil it. I shall make this point afterwards. Let's put a pin in this for now. We cut to outside the city, where Willy, who, by the way, looks an awful lot like James Marsden, holy balls, who was in the X-Men franchise in which he plays a character named Cyclops. Mind blown. Anyway, So he's watching his home burn to the ground, and he's cursing Cressida, aka No Pants, for betraying him, when suddenly she appears on the horizon. And it turns out she stayed in freaking Troy because she didn't want him to think that she was a witch who betrayed him, and she wants to bone and actually just have all these pretty little babies with him and yada yada yada. Actually, you know what? Sort it. This is pretty sweet. Let's have a soundbite. Soundbite.
Your cousin's help with it. We can build another Troy.
To which I have but one thing to say, namely, Troy was not built in a day, No Pants. And thus, we lose yet another companion. Farewell, Vicky Longlegs, Vicky No Pants, V-I-C-K-I, Vicky. You were fucking annoying. But you know what? Just like Susan, you grew a spine and developed as a character just as you were about to leave. Farewell. Okay, let's return to the pin. What the hell? When I saw this, spoiler alert, we're going to find out a little bit more about this at the very end of this episode, but when I saw this, I was thinking to myself, all right, you know what? I get that the Doc thought Vicky was still in the TARDIS, but he also knew that Katerina was in there. And you know what? That does not change by the end of this episode. He knew that Katerina was in there, and he just met her, but still he just dematerializes. To Time Lord knows where, he just up and plucks her from history, and I guess you could make the argument, you know what? In a way, he saves her life. But what if she didn't want to be ripped out of her timeline? What if she has a partner or a family or other loved ones that she'd rather be with? What if she was meant to survive and is actually of some historical significance? Doc, what are you doing? You don't know this girl. Whatever. Not the first time he's cocked up or abducted someone for that matter. So we end the episode, and thus the serial, on two things. on three things. Sorry, I'm so used to having two things to say all the time. All right, number one, Steve is mega injured and he's squealing on the couch about Vicky, but Doc reassures him that this is what Vicky wanted. Yeah, like he had time to discuss this with her. No, that's a lie. Number two, we get a second first impression of Katerina. Pretty hot, by the way, but holy freaking primitive. Holy with a W, that is. She thinks she's died because, quote, Princess Vicky told her that she would. So now she thinks the TARDIS is the afterlife. Cheers, Vapor Rob. Had to stick one last FU to the Doc and Steve, eh? And number three, the Doc frantically mumbles that he needs to land somewhere. ASAP. End of the Mythmakers. Oh, and we get a little title card. Next episode, The Nightmare Begins. Bad ass. Holy crap. Oh my god. I've just been speaking for an hour. Reviews. Review.
Review.
Okie dokie, I'm gonna keep this short. Despite this being a lost serial, despite it actually being really difficult to watch, I really liked it. I actually really liked it. I've been complaining a lot about it for the past hour or so, but I really liked it. I thought it was magnificent. Okay, wait, you know what? I'm not going to laud it completely because there are so many things to pick apart here, but I'm going to bullet point this instead. And by the way, I have zero notes for this, so I apologize if this is completely unstructured. Number one, the title. The serial is called The Mythmakers, and I think that might be both an interesting talking point and part of the problem. This is a historical, right? This is not a pseudo-historical, this is a historical episode or story or serial, whatever. But it's not. I mean, it's based on myth, or rather, like, it's based on Homer and Shakespeare, like, based on their words. So it's not based on actual historical fact. it's not historically accurate. Even though, maybe to some degree, it's actually more historically accurate than that Brad Pitt Orlando Bloom abomination. But that's not what this is. Like, it's not a historical. But still, it has all these tiny little elements of both that just seem either just oddly coincidental. Like, why would Stephen pick the name Diomedes for himself out of nowhere? Yeah. Why would they choose to call Vicky Cressida out of nowhere? Why would there be a one-eyed dude in this thing who is referred to as the Cyclops? All these things, right? Like, they're either massive coincidences or, and this is actually really how I feel, I feel like a lot of these things feel like they've almost been ham-fisted into it. It feels like they've really just strained themselves to ham-fist as many references to the Iliad or to, well, which is obvious, I guess, or to Shakespeare. But they've done it in a way that seems incongruent. It seems forced. And that I think, to a certain degree, is a negative. But then the interesting talking point, and I'm not going to talk about this because, you know what? I'm still in my flat by myself, and it'd be really weird if I had a debate with myself. But I think what we're faced with is more of a chicken and egg situation, historically speaking, than we were faced with in the Romans, for instance. I mean, in the Romans, you could say Nero was going to burn the city or have the city burned sooner or later anyway. He was going to do it, and the Doc merely gave him the idea in a way. Like, he was there as an inspiration for it. And that's fine. That is totally cool, because that's a historical story. This, however, is not. It's based on fiction that is it's based on a mythical retelling of a historical event that the Doctor and Stephen and Vicky are experiencing and taking part in, but in which they are acting based on the mythical words that are based on their actions. So, if they had not been there, would there not have been a horse, a wooden horse, which would then have got Homer to write about it, which would then have been read by Doc and Steve, which would then have inspired them to build it in the first place? Like, it's one of those situations. Would you, if Marty McFly goes back and he causes himself not to be born, will he then not be born and not be able to go back and cause himself not to be born? It's one of those paradoxes. So, anyway, you know what? If you are, for some reason, there's more than one of you listening to this podcast episode at this point, like at the same time, collectively, concurrently, I strongly recommend that you have this conversation with each other right now. Anyway, I'm going to move on though. Point number two, I'm going to say the Cyclops. The Cyclops is the Yeti of this story. He pops up just as a little bit of fan service. Oh yeah, we need a Cyclops in this. Let's just get this one-eyed man. But we are told nothing about him. He serves absolutely no purpose. He is even given a mission, but he doesn't even survive long enough to fail at this mission. Like, he just dies. Boom. Done. Why is he there? That just ticks me off. Can someone please tell me if he was a mythical creature or if people were just being really rude to him? Okay, number three. Is this number three? Number three? I can't even remember. Let's call it number three. The Romans, as in the cereal, the Romans. It is very difficult to not make a reference back to the Romans, mainly because we're talking about roughly the same time period and, you know, the costumes, the sets, the props, everything, the production value, essentially. In a way, this is, I mean, it's pretty reminiscent of it. I mean, you got the aesthetics of it, very similar. You have a lot of the humor, like you have the weird rapey Nero in the Romans, and here you have Paris, who's being like a complete buffoon. Very similar. If I had to pick a favorite of the two, oh, wow, difficult. It's a tough call. I mean, you can watch and enjoy the Romans, but this story, I think, is probably... Yeah, this... Oh, you know what? I don't know if this story is more interesting. No, I think... You know what? I think I might like the Romans more. Oh, we'll see. I mean, I don't even know what I'm going to give this in terms of rating. I have no idea. Shit, I'm so unprepared for this. Okay. That's all it. Next bullet point. Number four, was it? Whatever. Next bullet point. Helen. Where is Helen? This is a story of the Siege of Troy. Helen is name-dropped a bunch of times. We see Paris. Where is Helen? Is she even there? Is she alive? Has she left? Has she gone and met some other dude? What's going on? It is baffling to me that you can have a story about the Siege of Troy. You can include Priam and Paris and Achilles and Agamemnon and Menelaus, but you don't make any mention of Helen? This makes no sense to me. It is flummoxing. In a way, she is almost the idiot of the story as well, because she's mentioned and then just is forgotten about for all of eternity. Anyway, let's focus on some of the positives. The acting, even though in some instances it may seem as though they're chewing the hell out of the scenery, I gotta say, the acting is pretty fantastic. I mean, it is stage-level acting, but... And I'm sure this may seem very incongruous with the format of television, but I think it serves the purpose very well, because we've almost been conditioned to have people be incredibly well-spoken, and have people enunciate things in an almost theatrical manner when we think of... when they portray ancient Greeks or ancient Romans. Like this, it's almost clear. You wouldn't be, with the exception of that Hollywood movie Troy, they have to, let's face it, they have to speak with a British English accent. That's just a given now. And they have to sound incredibly sophisticated. And they do here, on both accounts. So you know what? Well done. Guys, I like it. Nice one. What else? We lose a companion and we gain another one. We lose Vicky. I said this before when I said my fond farewell of Vicky. She has been pissing me off since she arrived on the show. But once again, just as with Susan in The Dalek Invasion of Earth, Vicky actually was a character of some substance in this episode, or in this serial, in these four episodes. She was interesting, and she was engaging, and she had an actual storyline, and some, to a degree, I cared about her. That's maybe not the nicest thing you can say about one of the main characters of a show. Like, to a certain degree, I did actually care about what happened to her, you know? But I did, and that's a lot more than I did on previous occasions where she turned up, so it's a shame. Like, in this serial, we got to see what she was made of, what she could do, that she could act, that she could enthrall an audience and have emotional turmoil and this and that, not just panic and whatever. Even though, granted, in episode one, she was pulling her pigtails and that was like, oh, now I'm going to be scared. Pull my pigtails. But no, she was good in this. I liked Vicky in this. And even though I have to say, oh my freaking God, I am so pleased that she's no longer on the show. God, am I happy. It's not a tear-filled goodbye, but it's with a tiny little bit higher level of respect that I tip my hat in her general direction. So thanks, Vicky. Yeah, I'm done. I like this serial. I would recommend anyone watch it if they have the stamina and the patience to watch four episodes of reconstructed material. I don't know. I think there is an audiobook version of this out there. I have not listened to it. Maybe you should listen to that instead. But I'm going to give this serial a 3.8. It's not the best. It's not the worst. I have absolutely no recollection of how that relates to what scores I've given, or to the scores I've given other episodes, including the Romans, by the way. I have no idea. But right now, at this moment, after having spoken by myself about this serial for almost an hour, I feel like it's a 3.8. Okie dokie. You know what? We have a fantastic amount of listener minis this time as well. So let's go into listener reviews.
Listener minis.
Okie dokie. Our first mini review comes from Stephen. Stephen, how you doing, dude? He starts off with a tiny little bit of a callback to his previous review. He says, before I begin with my review of the Mythmakers, something I'd implied with my Galaxy 4 review, but realized I hadn't made explicit, I'm experiencing the lost episodes purely through the audiobooks. So I'm working purely off audio, rather than the recons Hubak Wen has been using. So, you know what, Stephen? That's awesome. You're giving us a very different perspective. And also, thank you very much for confirming what I literally just speculated, that there is an audiobook version of this story. Fantastic. I'm going to look that up. I'm actually quite curious now. Also, yes. Busted. This is the first time I'm reading these reviews. Okay, here we go. He goes on. As for the serial itself, this is the one with the Trojan War where we never actually meet Helen of Troy. One of the first things that struck me about the Mythmakers is how it almost seems like the Greek characters would rather be doing Shakespeare than Doctor Who. For instance, the interaction between Achilles and Hector at the serial's start would not be out of place on a theatre stage. The Doctor even accuses them of flinning and doing more talking than fighting. This felt out of place for me, and not what I would expect out of characters in an ancient setting like the Trojan War. I haven't watched many of the previous historicals like the Romans, so maybe I'm just noticing something that's actually common in those episodes. The second thing that struck me was how the various mythological characters were portrayed. Achilles and Paris get no respect. Odysseus is a massive asshole. And is it any wonder no one wants to listen to anything Cassandra says when a default reaction to nearly everything is hysterics? Good point. One thing I liked in particular about the ancient characters' portrayal is that, other than Achilles, no one immediately assumed or believed that the truth was divine. Everyone else is too cynical to entertain the idea more than half seriously. Very good point, yes. This serial felt padded in the third episode. Cyclops had no real purpose, very true, in the story, other than to fail delivering a message. Steven had his pointless prison break. At least the Doctor's constantly trying to change plans on Odysseus in the name of survival felt like he was deliberately stalling. Otherwise, the third episode felt like it was trying to use up time so it would end on the cliffhanger of the Trojan Horse. An otherwise light serial takes a dark turn once the Trojan Horse opens up, and the Greeks proceed to rape, pillage, and burn Troy. In the chaos, Vicky gives the Doctor as much of a goodbye as she can before hurrying off to join the boy she fell in love with, leaving the Doctor with a wounded Stephen and another hijacked companion in the form of Katarina. I've said before, I had no special dislike for Vicky. I felt her leaving with Troilus was a bittersweet ending. She's stayed behind in an uncertain time, but has done so in the name of love, and there's a sense of hope with her and Troilus. Rating-wise, I have to mark it down for the padding in Episode 3, and while hammy acting is hardly unknown in Doctor Who, I feel that in some of the scenes, like the intro with Hector and Achilles, it did more harm than good. Given how my review of Galaxy 4 was so much higher than anyone else's, I feel I should probably rate this one higher than I did Galaxy 4. So with that, I'll rate the Mythmakers an even 4.0. Holy shit, dude! Oh my god, that's a fantastic review. Okay, this is just the first review, and it's already knocked mine completely out of the water. Well done, Stephen. Very good points. Completely agree with you on the whole theatricality of the opening scene. But, as I said before, I think it actually suits the subject very well. With the exception of that opening scene, you have absolutely opened my eyes. That first fight between Achilles and Hector, it is ridiculous. And I have to say, you've put into words the farewell of Vicky in a much nicer way than I did. So thank you for that. Well done. People who are not Steven, oh my goodness, do you have access to a smartphone? Do you have access to the interwebs? Then please go to twitter.com/sgamer82. That's 82, the number. And follow him on Twitter. I do. So should you. Dude, thank you so much for your review. Next up, and bear in mind, I am reading these in the order in which they were sent in. Next up, we have JD. JD! How you doing, dude? J.D. has written the following. The Doctor manages to invent the Trojan horse, and there are a lot of characters which, had this been a year earlier, would be running around attempting to rape Barbara. A companion leaves by falling in love with a bit part in the episode, a la Susan Foreman, Martha Jones, Leela, Joe Grant, and a new companion arrives to make sure that the TARDIS team isn't all alpha males. The good. New companion Katerina is a complete divergence for the show, and despite the moronic production crew thinking she could go nowhere, she is a breath of fresh air. Just wish she'd have had a bit more build-up. It is not taking itself seriously. It's very Romans-esque in its humour, which is a good thing. I said that as well, JD. Which has been missing this season so far. Ooh, the bad. This is meant to be a historical, but the story of Troilus and Cressida is actually Chaucer, Boccaccio, and Shakespeare's interpretation of history. So actually, this entire thing is not really history at all. Holy freaking crap, JD, I made that exact point, except you're far better educated than I am. I had no idea Chaucer and Boccaccio had written about this. This is fantastic. Okie dokie. He goes on. The working titles for two of the episodes would have been significantly better. Instead of Temple of Secrets, it was originally planned to be Zeus Ex Machina. What? That's fantastic. And Death of a Spy was originally planned to be called Is There a Doctor in the Horse? Holy shit! Wow! Oh my goodness! That is fantastic! Why did they change those titles? Those are great! Fantastic trivia. Thank you very much. And he goes on. The pointless one. First of all, after all my mocking of Vicky, this is my favourite one of her episodes. I agree, by the way. Vicky was literally the second worst black and white companion, but the way she leaves in this episode makes me wonder if, had she lasted one or two more episodes, she would have been able to have had a much more memorable exit in Dalek's Master Plan. How much more interesting would it have been, instead of bringing on Katerina, that Vicky had lasted until episode 4 of the Dalek's Master Plan? Spoilers. On a side note, Maureen O'Brien, while unhappy with Vicky recently, wanted to continue on the show, and it was the producer who wrote her out when he saw how she nitpicked her dialogue, which, to be fair, makes me actually like her a lot more. That's really good. I had no idea about that. And now I'm super curious about what happens in episode 4 of Dalek's Master Plan. Yeah, spoiler alert, I have not seen and or listened to it yet. Okay, he concludes. Overall, I'm going to be nice to this story. It's probably the best Vicky episode, which, to be fair, is an incredibly low baseline. It would be nice to watch it on TV. The horse itself must have been incredible to see as a child on Saturday night on a small screen. JD gives this serial 3.5 out of 5. Once again, on the ball. Great minds, dude. Very nice. Fantastic mini-review. Awesome trivia, as per usual. The next time you and I speak on the phone and or on Skype and or in person, holy crap, I'm going to high-five you about this mini and then you're going to tell me even more about this. This is fantastic. Thank you very much. And thank you for opening my eyes again about Chaucer and Boccaccio. Okie dokie. Ladies and gentlemen, you probably follow him on Twitter already, but if you don't, then holy goodness. The only reason I could possibly conceive is that you don't have access to either the internet or Twitter by some weird twist of fate. Please, try to remedy the situation. Get a hold of some kind of internet-connected device. Take yourselves to twitter.com or download the Twitter app and follow this guy. He is at Marius Kane. That is Kane with a K. Yes, it is. Next up, we have Davis. Davis Williams of the Davis Principal fame. How you doing, Davis? Davis says, this is my new favorite historical episode for sure. I have always loved Greek history, especially the myths. Coincidentally, this serial is called The Myth Makers, and I knew it had high hopes before I even started watching it. It is such a shame that the episodes were all missing. I would love to see the fight scenes in action. Yeah, that makes two of us, dude. Anyway, the story begins with two soldiers fighting, Hector and Achilles. Achilles kills Hector as the Doctor steps out of his TARDIS. Achilles thinks that the Doctor is Zeus and is worshipping him and everything until Odysseus shows up. Odysseus turns out to be a huge jerk, and he captures the Doctor without fear of divine punishment. Yes, I made this point also. Well observed, Davis. He goes on. However, at the Greek camp, everyone agrees the Doctor is a Zeus, except for Odysseus. Soon enough, the Doctor's temple is captured. What does this mean? That's right, the Davis principle. Holy shit, did I point this out? I don't know if I pointed this out. Yes, you're absolutely right, Davis. Your principle applies here. Sorry, I'm cutting myself off mid-reading of your review. That is very rude of me. I apologize, Davis. I shall go on. Davis says, that's right, the Davis principle, not to toot my own horn or anything. Anyways, the Doctor admits to not being Zeus. Why? And Odysseus forces the Doctor to create a way to destroy the Trojans in the war. Meanwhile, the King of Troy is telling Vicky how she has the greatest personality ever. Yeah, right. Stephen shows up at Troy and ruins everything for Vicky, and she is forced to make the Trojans win. The Doctor tries to invent flying machines, but switches to the Trojan horse so that he doesn't have to test his idea out. The model of the horse looks amazing and really makes me wish we had more footage. Yes, same here, dude. He goes on. Finally, we have reached episode 4, which has the greatest title in Doctor Who history, The Horse of Destruction. You'll never guess what happens. The Greek jump out of the horse and kill everybody. We also get a new favorite character, Troilus. Vicky stays behind with him and we are rid of her forever. We also get a new companion, Katarina. Let me reiterate, this episode is amazing. It would have been even better if we actually saw the fight scenes. Also, it was a little slow in some areas. Overall, I would have to give this serial a 4.8. Oh, Davis, I have missed you and your huge heart. Fantastic! 4.8? Man, you love this serial. I don't blame you. Everything that you've said, literally everything that you have said, I completely freaking agree with. Well done, dude. That's what a douchebag I am. Yeah, I'm commending you for having the same opinion as I have. They're fantastic. You know what? I'm gonna do that. Yes, well done, dude. Awesome review. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen who are not Davis out there in the world, here's what I want you to do. You know exactly what it is, but I'm going to say it anyway. You have to follow this guy on Twitter. I mean, come on. It's for your own good. Follow this guy on Twitter and watch your lives improve. He is at ShrubThe. That is all in one word. Thank you again, Davis. Awesome. Next up, we have Gallifrey and Buccaneer. Alan, how you doing? He says, of all the missing serials of Doctor Who, this is the one that pains me the most to have been lost. I can live without Space Pirates and Galaxy 4s. There are others I wish would be found, the legendary Episode 4 of The Tenth Planet and its resolution in The Power of the Daleks, alongside others such as The Massacre and The Dalek's Master Plan. But The Mythmakers pains me, as it's the purest Hartnell story of his entire tenure on the show. The historical as a format belongs to Hartnell. 9, arguably 10 of his serials are historicals. Compare this to Troughton and Davison, who have only one pure historical apiece. No other Doctor has any pure historicals to their name. Side note, when I say pure historical, I mean a serial or story that has no alien intervention at all. With this in mind, I can safely say that this is the best of the bunch. The Mythmakers outshines Marco Polo, the Romans, the Smugglers, it even trumps the Aztecs just barely. There are many reasons I can safely say this, but the main one is this. The Doctor doesn't have control. In this story, more than any other, he's on the back foot. He dashes about Troy, trying to gain any grasp over his situation, pretending to be a god when he's clearly so ungodlike here. Within the first episode, he loses both Vicky and Steven. Steven himself is later captured and recaptured, and the Doctor doesn't affect these events in any way. The only plan the Doctor has to fall back on is established history. To gain back control of the TARDIS, he must suggest the idea of the Trojan Horse. Obviously, here we enter a paradox, where the Doctor's idea to ape history is what creates iconic history in the first place. But let's leave that discussion for the Moffat-era reviews. Holy shit, dude! I said this exact thing, like, mere minutes ago! Fantastic! Great minds think alike! Oh, okay, he goes on. But here the Doctor goes against his own words from the Aztecs. You can't rewrite history, not one line! He does away with his godlike understanding of the correctness of history and time becoming a cog in the machine, a part of history, and he is forced to board the horse by Agamemnon, entering Troy with no further plan beyond finding the TARDIS. So in the chaos of war, which would be thrilling to see footage of, the Doctor stumbles upon his companions, who've made their own way with no help from him, and eventually escape. Hartnell plays the Doctor as close as he can to his usual self, aloof, irritable, and more than anything, in control, but in the face of prophecies and generals, he is powerless. Vicky is responsible for departing from the TARDIS. Her lover Troilus is a man who does have control, killing Achilles and securing the safety of Vicky. The Doctor, as a father figure, has failed her, and now the man in her life has changed. So too does she change into a Trojan woman, with barely a farewell to the adventuring in the TARDIS, as she moves on to bigger, brighter things. Katarina becomes companion only due to her caring of Steven, carelessly ending up on the TARDIS and whisked away to short-lived adventure. There's so much in this story to love. I've barely covered any intricate detail of the side characters, the setting, the actual plotting of the story, or how serious it all is, lacking any of the comedy of the Romans. Oh, that goes against some of the other stuff we've heard here. This story works so well as a precursor to the Daleks' master plan. The death and destruction of that serial ties into the loss and pessimism felt here. The Mythmakers, to me, is undoubtedly the best historical, alongside one of the very best First Doctor stories, and I can safely say one of the best stories of Doctor Who. It's a tragedy we can't watch the serial in all its glory, but even without visuals, I listened to the audiobook version for reference, I can safely give The Mythmakers a 4.8. Buccaneer, I have no words. What a beautiful and insightful review. I can't but thank you. Oh my goodness. Granted, I still haven't even seen all of Hartnell, and I've literally not seen a single Troughton ever in my life. Not yet. But for some reason, I hadn't even considered this, that historicals were, as you said, a format belonging to Hartnell, that this is what he did. Very well observed. Fantastic review. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, please follow Gallifrey and Buccaneer on Twitter and let him know what a fantastically spiffing review he's written. He is at Alan R. Trussler. I suggest you go to the website to find out how you spell that. Also, 4.8. I haven't listened to the audiobook. That is a very generous mark, but you know what? I trust you. Okie dokie. Next up, we've got Kyle. Kyle Rath. How you doing, buddy? I hope you're still staying safe. Kyle says, Doctor Who Classic Series Review, Season 3, Episode 3, The Mythmakers. This review is not up to my usual thoroughbred brilliance, but it's still kind of a bitchin' ride. Strap in, you may be a bit too late to say whoa to this horse. Oh, let's see what you did there. The Battle of Troy, lamented in song and story, is played out like a soggy tortilla in the sun, as Law and Order DSV fumble, conspire, and generally piss all over themselves into the annals of history. After a short vacation off-screen, the TARDIS finds itself on the sandy plains of Asia, just in time for some sweaty homoerotic posturing complete with swords and sandals courtesy of Achilles and Hector. The Doctor gets all zoosy-goosy, oh, I like that, with Achilles, but is eventually dominated by Big O Odysseus. And Vicky joins the Psyche Hotline Alliance after the Trojans steal the TARDIS. Long story short, after much smarmy elocution by all parties, the following series of events occurs. The Doctor would escape if he could. Troy gets a wooden pony. Troilus gets wood for Vicky. Stephen is wooden for most of the time. Hector was played by Alan Haywood. The TARDIS is a space-time box made of wood that can be hand-carried like a fucking mail, apparently. The Doctor is forcibly wooed by Odysseus into the role of accomplice to mass murder. No big. The set design courtesy of John Wood. Fantastic. He goes on. Reconstructions are painful to watch, but they can be mildly amusing when the dialogue is spewed forth with articulation akin to Carry On Shakespeare in the Park. The Doctor yet again gets mistaken for a god. He also reluctantly invents the Horse of Aesaea. For her final outing, Vicky takes a central role with all the purring seduction of a bus stop. She also somehow manages to wrap Troilus around her finger. Also, spoiler alert, she's 16. Yeah, just fucking let that sink in, pervs. Finally, she departs the TARDIS for good. Thank fuck for that. In trade, we get Trojan handmaiden Katarina, who is not the sharpest marble. Stephen is still a simpering, annoying git who sounds like a 5-year-old who didn't get a lollipop for being a good boy. After all, he is no Ian fucking Chesterton. He isn't even good enough to be Ian fucking Chesterton's chest hair. Dude needs to take an arrow to the knee. Here's Cressida for you, in case you forgot that chewy morsel of look at me, I'm acting dialogue. He concludes, the humour and over-the-top dialogue were okay, while the interplay between Hartnell and Ivar Salter's Odysseus was somewhat interesting. As for the comedy-slash-historical genre of Doctor Who, this one is a late finisher. Thanks to not enough surviving footage, too much Vicky-centric plot, not nearly enough Ian and Barbara, and punny writing, I should only realistically give it a 1.5. But Vicky is gone, so fuck it, I'll splurge and give it a 1.7. Very controversial, sir. Very controversial. I believe that is the lowest rating anyone has given it so far. Yeah, very interesting. I'm super pleased to have people representing both sides of the front here. We've got people who really enjoy the story. We've got people who enjoy it a little bit less. As always, super fun review. Thank you very much, Kyle. People who are not Kyle Rath, follow him on Twitter. He is at Sinister Super Spy. That's super without any vowels. And then we have one more mini review, and it comes from long-time listener, many-time contributor, Gina Guerrero. Gina, how you doing? Long time no see. Gina writes, it is sad that visually all we had were a few pictures and a few grainy 8mm clips, so I mostly based my review as if it were a radio play. After initially being mistaken for Zeus, the Doctor agrees to use his scientific knowledge to assist the Greeks in defeating the Trojans, or else Odysseus will kill him. After initially rejecting the horse idea as ridiculous, the Doctor finds himself short on alternatives and, to save his own skin, suggests it. Odysseus loves the idea, and it ultimately becomes a war-winning maneuver. I hope you appreciate the Trojan gravitas that I am lending your review, by the way, Gina. Meanwhile, the TARDIS is taken into Troy by the cowardly Paris, son of the Trojan king Priam, possibly Priam, with Vicky inside it. When Vicky emerges, she too admits to being a time traveler and promises to use her knowledge of history to try and help them. Priam's daughter Cassandra doesn't trust Vicky at all, and who would blame her? And claims that she is a witch who will bring death and destruction to all of Troy. She also accurately predicts the horse, but nobody believes her. The story ends with Vicky's exit being an exact replica of Susan's exit. For love, Vicky decides to ditch the Doctor to stay with her new Trojan boyfriend that she has just met. At least Susan got a proper goodbye from the Doc. Vicky apparently does her goodbyes off camera. I have to admit that Vapor Rub did manage to slightly improve by the end of her run, mostly with her witty repartee with Stephen. The standout for me was Cassandra, who was chewing up the scenery throughout the story and proving she thoroughly enjoyed her role. Everyone else in the cast was either overly melodramatic or cookie-cutter characters. I was fairly bored throughout the story, with only one or two genuine chuckles. Stray observations. The actor playing Troilus, a teenager, looked almost 40. Once again, the Doctor preaches about not interfering in events, yet he directly interfered in this story. Why? Because his life was in danger. Well observed. A few other people have said the same. You're in good company. She goes on, so he's happy to interfere when it suits him, which means that he is directly responsible for the losses of countless lives. In brackets, having flashbacks of early First Doc. I actually grew a weird soft spot for the Cyclops and was actually sad when he died, even though in the poem he dies by Odysseus' hand. Apparently, Vicky was written out of the show because she was unsatisfied with her role. She was supposed to leave in the Daleks' master plan, which to me says that she was such a bad actress that even the Doctor Who writers were ready for her to leave as much as we were. Lastly, if they had called Episode 3 Is There a Doctor in the Horse, as originally planned, it would have been the best named Doctor Who episode ever, at least in my opinion. In mine as well, Gina, I assure you. She concludes, in the end, I rate this a 2.8, because the Mythmakers isn't quite as strong as the early historicals. I did give it a few extra points for never having to see Vicky again, although I will miss JD's Vicky Irritation Index. Hear, hear, Gina. Great review, thank you very much. I can't believe I hadn't heard of these original titles, these working titles before. They are fantastic. I completely agree with you. Is There a Doctor in the Horse? That's insanely bodacious. I would have liked that. Like the whole small profit, quick return. Like every episode could have been a pun. Oh god, it would have been fantastic. I have to say, a little bit surprised by your panning of Vicky. I personally, I thought she'd improved wildly in this episode. But that's great. We've got another person not exactly liking this episode. This is fantastic! We've got people saying this is the best historical. We've got people saying this is the not the best historical. Gina, thank you very much for another epic review. Amazeballs, people who are not Gina Guerrero, what are you waiting for? Go and follow her on Twitter right now if it's the last thing you do. Can you imagine? A meteor could hit your house tonight. I don't want to freak anyone out, but it could happen. And would you really like to leave this earth not having followed Gina Guerrero on Twitter? What was that? No, I didn't think so. Well, go to Twitter right now. Follow her. She is at GinaGuerrero1. That's one, the number. Gina, awesome. And that is the last mini review we have received for this one. Holy crap. Guys, you are fantastic. Thank you so much, all of you. And thank you for listening to me. Thank you so much for your patience. I hope you had a good time. Cue the begging. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've listened this far, oh my goodness, you must love this show. Either that or you just have tremendous stamina and patience. Either way, I congratulate you. Please, I'm going to beg a little bit. I feel like you are the right demographic for this. Why not like us on Facebook? That's facebook.com/who back when, all in one word. Give us a like. We would massively appreciate it. Rate and review us on iTunes if you're into the whole iTunes spiel. go to Reddit and give us a thumbs up or a vote up or whatever it's called on Reddit. I'm sorry, I'm really not very au fait with Reddit. Check us out on Google Plus. We're there. I keep updating it. And last but not least, follow me on Twitter. If you've listened to me babble on and you want to hear even more or read even more of what I have to say, follow me on Twitter. I'm at Ponkin. That's right. That's what my friends call me. Thanks again for listening. Next classic is going to be a big one. The Daleks Master Plan. Holy Jesus balls. A 12 episode massive epic, most of which is completely missing. And I'm likely to be doing that as a solo one as well. I think I need to speed up that one a little bit more than I did this one. But it's my first time. I'm not entirely sure in what order I'm dropping all these episodes, but most likely the next audiobook episode is going to be Hot House, which is a fantastic one to review. And the next New Who review is going to be, I'm going to say Dalek. I think this is going up before Dalek. So yeah, have a listen to that one as well. Okie dokie. I'm done. I need a cigarette. Be rad and excellent to each other. Shamalama ding dong, rock on, and cha-chow.
Who back when?